Automatically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
Oscar's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
The body's filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not, the heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. The neurobiological system is telling it to run, but your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. And do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
Listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome to the perfect triangle. The perfect triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And now, the
modified organisms, and we're injecting them in the little kid's arm.
But the stage in the brain, so still, I scream out. I do not understand this whooshing at all. Hello, welcome to episode 38 of The Perfect Triangle. Wow, it seems like it finally died down. That never ran into that one before. Buonasera, my friends. Welcome. I'm your host, Giuseppe Vaffangulo, broadcasting live worldwide from the newly formed mask-free and vaccine-free sanctuary of Morningwood, Virginia, 11 miles west of the District of Criminals. I don't know if you could really hear those songs. There was some weird whooshing, like we were in a wind tunnel the whole time. The first song, Two for Triangle, was me. That's my old band, Compulsives, 1995, called Shadow, the second single and the last release from an album that never got released. And that was followed by the brilliant new one, Tribes by Crack the Sky. Can you guess the theme? Shadows and tribes. We are shadowed by the totalitarian vaccine state with no intention of allowing us to live free. And we are driven into a divide and conquer warring tribes. It appears there is no limit to the insanity wrought upon us by the soulless globalist parasites. I saw this headline this afternoon at Town Hall PM. The headline reads, Biden scolds Americans for acting like they have freedom. Really? Really, Joe? It's as if we're living in a bad science fiction movie. The all-out globalist attack of the Great Reset, reset striving for the New World Order, otherwise known as the Scamdemic for the last 13 months, has literally created alternate realities existing simultaneously in the United States right now. Groper Joe lectures Americans to be obedient that way, right? He's lamenting the fact that people are waking up to it. Entire states like Texas, California, well, not all of California, Florida, South Dakota, and others are saying, in fact, the Wisconsin Supreme Court just overthrew the traitorous Governor Tony Weiner as far as a mask mandate. So people are realizing after 13 months, it's all a scam. But I really like the responses on Twitter to Groper Joe's saying people are acting like they have freedom. And one fella said, lived my life as normal for the entire last year, went to weddings and birthdays, bridal showers, drank at bars, went out to eat, only wore a mask when I have to. Exactly right. I do not wear masks either. And then another fella said, they live in an alternate reality where Florida, Texas, South Dakota, many other free states don't exist. So weird. Hell, I'm in Southern California. I'm going out for dinner and drinks tonight. It will be packed as it has been for the last couple of months. So, you know, it's funny when you overextend and try to create laws and totalitarian oppression, people will wake up. And the brilliant Prescient 1982 novel by sci-fi great Robert Heinlein, Friday, detailed the collapse of the United States into a series of fractured corporate nation states. I mean, Heinlein saw this in 1982. He wrote, Heinlein observed that the U.S. collapsed because it created so many layers of bureaucratic, administrative, totalitarian control that it could no longer be enforced. He wrote, open quote, it seems to me that any law that is not enforced and can't be enforced weakens all other laws. And that's the idea of Groper Joe saying we have no freedoms. We have total freedom. We only choose to participate with any law at any level. People need to own their power and understand that. And so another quote that is really interesting later in the book, open quote, Heinlein writes, "A dying culture invariably exhibits personal rudeness, bad manners, lack of consideration for others in minor matters. A loss of politeness, of gentle manners, is more significant than a riot." And how about that going on constantly these days? Nobody can discuss, nobody can debate. Everybody has to scream and know better than the divide and conquer other side of the red and blue and the countless other. You know, even in the past couple of days, two telling events confirmed what everyone paying attention already knew. The Rona scamdemic was created and launched to drive as many Goyim cattle as possible to perpetual quaxine enslavement. The first event was by a globalist Pratt girl named Dr. Liana Wen, a Chinese woman who, unbelievable. Having researched her, I can state Wen is not the sharpest tool in the shed, but she makes up for it with zeal as a lackey for the globalist big pharma state. Listen to this quote when she was being interviewed by Fredo Cuomo, the younger Fredo Cuomo, Dr. Liana Wen.
"Clear to them that the vaccine is the ticket back to pre-pandemic life. And the window to do that is really narrowing. I mean, you were mentioning, Chris, about how all these states are reopening. They're reopening at 100%. And we have a very narrow window to tie reopening policy to vaccination status. Because otherwise, if everything is reopened, then what's the carrot going to be? How are we going to incentivize people to actually get the vaccine? So that's why I think the CDC and the Biden administration needs to come out a lot bolder and say, if you're vaccinated, you can do all these things. Here are all these freedoms that you have. Because otherwise, people are going to go out and enjoy these freedoms anyway."
Can you believe that? This lackey is coming right out and saying that we need a totalitarian state. Otherwise, people are going to enjoy the freedoms because there is no actual pandemic. There is no plague. It's all a complete and utter farce to drive this unbelievable fifth generation attack on our country, a sovereign republic, by these globalists who don't want independent nations. They want the North American Union, just like they have the European Union. And right before we came on air, I found somebody put together a brilliant mashup of the goof when and the idea of you get a Krispy Kreme donut with every jab. This is really well done.
"We have a very narrow window to tie reopening policy to vaccination status. Because otherwise, if everything is reopened, then what's the carrot going to be? Then what's the carrot going to be?"
Activate Operation Krispy Kreme.
Amazing. If I get the jab, I can get a free donut every day for the rest of the year.
Getting fat eating donuts if you're not watching the video. Cardiac event.
"He is a gentle servant. We can save him.
We will now administer localized regenerative therapeutics.
We can build him back better.
Build back better."
Man, that is really well done. I mean, that's the whole ridiculous scam of it all. So let's see, where did we leave off here? The second telling event is the CDC actually came out with the complete final death numbers for 2020. You know, of course, certainly the greatest Rona plague of the 21st century has had to kill, you know, at least 50 million more people, right? I mean, my God, it's a plague. It's oh, we should be so afraid. We have to wear masks. It's so deadly. And guess what? That's not how it played out after all. 2018, deaths, all causes, 2,008 million, according to the CDC, which should stand for clown car deceiving corruptors, with lie after lie by these big pharma attack dogs. Deaths, all causes, 2,839,205. And now, 31 December 2020, the final total is what, 5 million? No, actually 2,838,621. So in reality, you have about 600,000 less deaths in the past year, the great Rona plague, the great one. And then finally, the cherry on the Sunday of lies and deceptions was the new CDC director, another one of those South Koreans all over the Groper Joe administration, crying crocodile tears on how many people will die from the Rona. Actually, what I see is tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people dying worldwide from the untested, unproven genetic altering injection. I see 99.997% of Rona patients under the age of 65 recovering from what is just the common cold with a couple of scary gain of function bells and whistles added to terrify Karen and Darren into taking the magic jab. Good luck, Karen and Darren. You're going to need it. The three sides of today's perfect triangle are personal freedom, globalist bunny slipper on your neck, and blended realities. With that being said, I'd like to introduce my two co-hosts, David Scorpio, host of Operation Scorpio on Saturday, and Brutal Honesty, Chris Weinert, also a Saturday host. So how are you gentlemen doing today? I got to get Jimmy.
Good, man. How you doing?
Doing well.
Doing good, man. Great opening. You know, Giuseppe, it was pretty funny that a CDC official was actually being quite honest for a change. And, you know, Chris Cuomo is a big faker. He pretended to have coronavirus, and he just recently got caught pretending to lift a 100-pound barbell over his head a bunch of times. Totally fake. Fake news, fake everything, guys.
Fake everything. You know, we have a special treat today, two A-list guests who happen to be good friends on their own. First, best-selling author and multimedia rising star, Charlie Robinson, host of Microaggression and The Union of the Unwanted on YouTube, David Icke's Iconic Network, and numerous other podcast audio platforms such as iTunes and many others. And Charlie is the best-selling author of The Octopus of Global Control and the follow-up, recently a number one on Amazon bestseller, The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire. And we're also joined by Revolution Radio empresario Jimmy Jean, probably has the best show on Rev Radio, Into the Microcosm. And now another version on Aftermath Media has drawn about 4 million people listening to the show, Clyde Lewis's big new network. So both these gentlemen are joining us tonight to discuss Bill Gates, the scamdemic, the decline and collapse of the American empire, and other lighthearted topics. And we'll be glad to take your calls an hour or two. Charlie, welcome to the Perfect Triangle. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, man. Rising star. I don't know about that, man.
Well,
not according to Twitter. They want me gone.
Yeah,
again.
Isn't that nutty? Hey, I have a question. You wrote The Octopus of Global Control in 2017, and that was like your springboard to get into broadcasting, because if I did the math right, you're on like show 110. By the way, your last podcast, Gates of Hell, was just brilliant, man. Really, really good.
You.
Yeah. So did you write the book and then you decided to dive into multimedia?
Yeah. So I wrote The Octopus. It came out in 2017. And then I went out to promote it on podcasts, and I wound up meeting Jeff Berwick, the host of Anarchast and the owner of the Dollar Vigilante and the founder of Anarchapulco, the largest anarchist convention. I was doing his podcast promoting the book. When we got done recording, we were just talking off air, and he said to me, you know, it's all coming down, man. And I was like, what? Like what? And he's like, the banking system, it's a house of cards. It's all coming down. And I said, well, yeah, course. And we started talking about it. And he said, we should work on something together. You interested in doing a book? And I said, yeah, I think so. So he sent me some ideas and I sent him some ideas back. And that became The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, which we started the summer of 2018. Now, I hoped it was going to be out in time in February of 2020, in time to launch it at an Acapulco, his big convention that he has, but it wasn't quite done. And I was a little frustrated and thinking, damn, it would have been the perfect time. Well, 3 weeks later, the Corona situation happened. Uh-huh. And we were like, whoa, we need to like slam on the brakes and see how this thing plays out. And so we waited and waited and waited. And then in August of 2020, I said, I've seen enough, Jeff. How about you? He said, yeah, me too. So we finished up the book and put it out on the Friday before elections. And it became a number one bestseller on election day, which is just the perfect irony. Because if you read the book, you'll never vote. You know what I mean? You're just, you have no interest in any of that stuff. So in between that, the podcast started in Macroaggression started in March of 2020. So it kind of went book, podcast, but in as far to me, it did. But as far as everyone else is concerned, it went book, podcast, book. But it's just more of a function of timing. We were sort of hanging out to see how the Corona situation developed, because we knew it was going to be, an important component of the book. And it's funny, because when you write about, the end of the American Empire, if we had put it out when I wanted it to come out, which was February of 2020, people would have been like, yeah, maybe, sure, I guess. When you put it out after you go through 6 months of Corona, everyone goes, oh yeah, we 100%, this is good. I think that's why the book did as well as it did, because the timing of it, and everyone kind of was prepped for it over the last couple of months leading up to it. So by the time when you're trying to introduce the concept of everything coming down, well, if you do it in the middle of a pandemic, it certainly does seem to be a little bit more relevant than if you do it before the pandemic.
Jimmy Jean, so how did you come to meet Charlie, and what are your thoughts on where we are 13 months into this so-called pandemic?
Well, hey, and thanks for having me. So Charlie and I met through a good friend of both of ours, which is Kev Baker, on the Kev Baker Show, and Charlie and I met on the show. And we continued to have a friendship. And when I was living up in Colorado and we were going to get together, I was living up in a town with a sweet hot springs. And so we were going to try to make a plan, and Charlie was going to try to get up there. But I ended up leaving Colorado before then and heading on out. So Charlie and I have been friends for, I don't know, a couple, 3 years or so. Hey, Charlie, something like
yeah.
that. So that's how we met. And, we've done quite a few shows together, and Charlie's just a great guy, man, and got a good energy about him. And, he's got a real handle on what's going on. So it's always great to be in a conversation with someone and, the respected host that you also have on your show, Scorpio. Nice to see you, bruh. And, I'm sorry, who's the other person that's on?
Chris Weinert, Brutal Honesty.
Hey, Brutal Honesty, Chris Weinert. Good to meet you. I may have met you before, and I'm sorry if I'm drawing a blank, but I've been up all night. So, there we are.
I was on with, on Giuseppe's show. I think you were on a couple weeks ago. I was on there with you.
Yeah. I'm sorry, man. It's all a blur. I mean,
it really is.
Yeah. Since this whole thing has happened, and that was the question originally, is the whole thing seems like a blur at this point. I'm making the best out of it that I can. So, I took care of a lot of things that were in my way, clutter and whatnot, just simply because, you start looking around, over the summer, here there was fires where I live, and I was told to evacuate, and I stuck around anyway. And then after everybody left and there was nobody left, I was the only one here. I started to realize that I stuck out like a sore thumb. So like people have this concept of what they think it's going to be like when the stuff hits the fan. And, I kind of went through a small scale run through what it's going to look like over the summer. Including everything that was going on with these, measures that were under as far as these sicknesses that have been purported to be floating around somewhere. And so, idea of what things are like. They kick you out of your house. When they say evacuate, you got to think eviction because you may never come back. What if your house burns down? You know, so I filled my car with everything that I needed, and I looked back and I saw that there was a whole bunch of crap in my life that I didn't need. And so I made quick haste to getting rid of that stuff. But, you know, when I was coming home, I couldn't come home because there, unless I wanted to get into a an Old West type shootout with the cops that had everything blocked with 30 highway patrols on the exit of my road. So there's no way once you leave your house, you're no way you're coming back. And when you're there after everybody evacuates, you are a potential looter, you know, so they check everything, you know, you come pull it out with every good thing you have in your house. And all of a sudden you look like a robber, you know, because your car is filled with all your best stuff, you know? So, I mean, it's just been one big blur, you know, people are calling it Blur's Day, and that's what it's like. It's just one big, you know, I've talked about this before. It takes 90 days to break a habit. So the first 90 days of this thing, everybody was broken. Okay. The next 90 days, everyone was retrained. Okay. And now everybody's running amok because now people just are just trained to do what they do. And they're just doing it because they're just like Pavlov's dogs, just ringing the bell. And, you know, everybody's been retrained. So, I'm trying to do my best to stay out of the fray, you know. I don't go outside of my door every day looking for a fight about, you know, what I know and don't know and think and don't think, you know. I pick my battles, and for the most part, I'm done fighting, man. You know, it's like I'm not here to convince anybody of anything, you know. Make your own decisions, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, there's enough information out there. It's just I don't want to put my energy into it. You know what I mean? I got better. I'll build a shoe shine box and go shine shoes down at the train station. You know, I mean, I would get more out of it. You know what I mean? Instead of getting, you know, people don't want to hear it. You know, people want to beat up on you for showing them the truth or whatever. They don't want to hear the truth. People really don't. That's really the bottom line.
Well, many of them don't. Dave Scorpio, why don't you jump in?
Hey, great observations there, Jimmy. Excellent story. And Charlie, really nice to meet you, man. And
nice to meet you, too.
Yeah, I thought you brought up some great points, too, about how the financial system was coming apart. And it was becoming clear to a lot of people that the financial system was essentially unraveling like a cheap sweater. Yeah. And what they've done is, you know, this COVID thing is the perfect cover, so it's not their fault. It's like, hey, you know, it's an act of God. COVID happened. It's not our fault that we mismanaged the financial system and that basically the whole financial system is a Ponzi scheme. It's provided the elite controllers incredible cover. And unfortunately, most people are buying right into it right now.
Yeah, about a little over a year ago, when I was at Anarchapulco 2020, so middle of February 2020, I did my presentation. The book was, in my opinion, the book was almost done, but we were waiting on some things. So I did the presentation about what the book was going to be about. And I talked about financial collapse. But I also was very quick to say they will blame it on something other than themselves. I didn't know it was going to be a virus. I wasn't Nostradamus here, but I did know enough about the way the banks work. And I said, look, prime suspect will be Deutsche Bank. You watch them as they go. So does Wall Street. If they come down, they're so interconnected now. They've got derivatives on each other's books. I mean, if one of them can't pay, then it starts a chain reaction. It'll take them all down. So my number one suspect was Deutsche Bank in particular, but Wall Street in general, because they were up to their old tricks again. And we saw the Fed printing money. Now, mind you, at this conference that I'm speaking at, there is also a crypto component to it. So they know. I mean, they know what's going on with infinite money printing. And so you've got all the Bitcoin guys in the audience listening to this, nodding their head going, we see it. So, you know, I went through that economic collapse or the real estate collapse in 2008. I was living in Las Vegas and working in real estate. So I rode that thing up and then watched it crash. And years later, I'm watching the movie, The Big Short. I read the book, but I wanted to watch the movie. And I walked out of the movie and my wife says, what did you think of the movie? I said, it was a great documentary. She goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, the scene in the movie where the guys are at a strip club in Miami and the stripper's like, hey, I'm also a real estate agent and I can, you know, I can do your loans and everything." I had that exact same thing happen to me in 2004 when I was selling new homes. I had a guy come in with his real estate agent and she went to the bathroom and I said, it was an older guy. He looked like he'd been up all night. I said, how long have you known your agent? He goes, I just met her last night at Cheetah's. She's a stripper. She's also does real estate. And I was like, oh my God. Then she sits down and I'm trying to play it cool. And she goes, I'm also going to do his loan. I was like, of course you are. So, you know, like, you know, Jimmy joked about going to shine shoes. There's that old saying about like, once the shoe shine guy knows is telling you tips, stock tips, it's time to get out. Well, once the stripper is doing your loan, it's time to get out of the housing market as well. And so I was sort of predisposed to understanding a financial collapse, not because I'm some financial expert or anything, but because I'd gone through it and I saw a lot of the same signs. I saw this irrational exuberance. I saw a lot of people. I saw the Fed printing money like crazy. And I was thinking, this is not going to end well for us. And of course, what's happened in the years since I gave that presentation was that it turned out. And I mean, I didn't predict, obviously we didn't predict the virus situation, but we did predict the cover story. We knew there would be a cover story. And like you said, you're right, Scorpio, it's exactly what they needed. You can't really blame anyone for it. You go, oh, it's just it's just a natural virus. So what are you going to do? Get mad at the virus? Certainly wasn't our fault, the bankers. Yeah. But it was their fault and it is their fault. It continues to be. And yet they're going to skate by on this and not have any sort of negative repercussions from it until it all comes down. You know, and then we'll look back in the history books and it will be like one of the chapters I put in the new book was talking about debasement of the currency and how, you know, I'm always thinking, well, the Federal Reserve is just printing money out of thin air. Well, in the book, we talked about how back in the Roman days, they had a concept called, you had a concept called coin clipping. They'd take the silver or gold coins and they'd clip little pies, you know, pizza slices out of the edges, and they do it all around the coin, collect all those things up, maybe do four or five different coins, you get enough together, melt it down and make a new coin. So they were debasing their currency back then because they had overextended their military and they were putting in place ridiculous government policies and they needed more money that they couldn't support. So they started debasing their currency. So I'm watching this, we're writing about this and I'm going, here I am thinking that the Fed had the magic money printing machine and that they're the first ones to do it. Maybe not the first ones, but in my head, I'm thinking, you know, they should know better, but they learned it from the Romans who fell into the same trap.
Chris Weinert, this is right up your alley. You want to jump in?
Yeah, I'm starting to think that there's a group of people that have like superseded all empires and haven't necessarily represented themselves by their proper affiliation. And they're historically maybe not noted. You hear about the Greeks or the Romans, or you hear about all these, you know, empires, and you see the marks that these people put in, the symbols, the formulas, the usury concept, the bondage, the turning people out, the feudalism, and this whole model, whether they're using the Vatican or the nation state or the corporation or the plantation to do it. Ultimately, these guys are putting in these merchant guilds and these systems, these hierarchies of cruelty throughout empires, taking the wealth of nations and empires, and then pretty much going on like a parasite guild to the next mark, to the next empire, in my opinion. So like, I think that history, if you look at it with this scope and really start to dig into it, you know, you're going to see this Judeo-Masonic connection that really starts to bleed through and represent itself in the way that we're kind of seeing right now.
I'm nodding my head in agreement.
Love you guys, man.
This is nothing. It's nothing new. And we talked about that early on in the book to set the stage for where we were going. We talked about the history of the empires. They follow a very predictable pattern. It's just a cycle. And when you get to the final stage, you get the bread and circuses, or, you know, Michael Malice, I think, said, where we are right now is all circus, no bread. But you go through these sort of cycles. And when you get to the last stage, one of the things you realize after looking back on empires and how they collapse is that surprisingly, the people that were in the middle of the empire are some of the last people to know. They're the last to figure it out. They're the propagandized to, you know, they're drinking their own Kool-Aid and they don't understand. They can't see it because they're being every sort of resources used to convince them that everything is fine when it's not fine, that the military isn't overextended, that their money is sound, that there's not social decay, that, you know, all these things. They spend an inordinate amount of time trying to paper over that and convince you that everything is fine rather than fixing the problem. But that's the sign of a dying empire. And by all accounts, it is undeniable that we are in the last stage of empire. And I think that if people understand that and they look at some, you know, the history of what has happened in the past, they will understand that what is coming our way is a tsunami. Stop it. The best thing you can do is get to higher ground, recognize the signs. We wrap the book by going back to December 26, 2004, the Banda Aceh, Indonesia earthquake, where that morning people came out to the beach and they said, where's the water line? It's all gone. It's all the water is out. It's a mile out to shore. And they started walking up, you know, where the ocean had been, and they're finding shells and they're like taking pictures. And isn't this great? Well, the people that recognized the signs, that knew what that meant, they immediately headed to higher ground. Also the animals too, apparently they instinctively knew get to higher ground. So where we are right now, and the things that we talked about in the book, tried to make people aware of, was what you're recognizing right now is the water. You know, the water is gone. What do you do when the water is gone? You head to higher ground. You grab the people closest to you. You say, "I no time to explain. Just trust me. Let's go." You're not going to be able to save everyone. And what we've witnessed over the last year, especially in the United States, is that, you know, there are a lot of people that are not, that don't want to be saved. They want to believe. And you've got to prioritize your time. Giuseppe, you started the show by talking about, you know, prioritizing time. You're talking about how you not having the energy for things like this, for dealing with people that aren't willing to accept it. Boy, I mean, we've got to, we can't save everybody. And for those that have the ears to hear it, man, it's time to get prepared. And also, I think on a side note, we owe the preppers an apology for ever making fun of them, because they were right.
Yeah. Jimmy, what do you think as far as the divide and conquer between the Karen and Darrens and the Larrys and Marys who are totally trusting the government, trusting Tony Fauci, trusting Bill Gates, trusting the celebrities who are telling them to get the jab? And what are your thoughts on all this?
Well, it's a strange and weird subject to talk about, because for me, excuse me, a lot of what I look at it from a marketing perspective. So any of these situations that arise, that get grabbed onto by the alternative media and brought out, trotted out, I'm mostly looking at it from demographics. I'm looking at how far the rumor can travel through social media. You know, I'm looking at all these different things. And so for me, the point blank, of my discovery as far as any of this goes was staying away, because I'm not a microbiologist or a doctor. But just from a marketing perspective, I can see that the marketing has made a substantial penetration across the board throughout our society. So anyone who's wearing the flag, if you know what I'm saying, the flag of Michelle Pfeiffer.
right.
If you see somebody wearing that flag, there's somebody that now has bought into the programming. So from that, you can look at that demographic and see the people who don't follow that protocol, and that is a severe minority. And that part of the herd can be easily diverted off with all kinds of different measures as far as being your ability to move and freely being stymied by some requirement of you to take in something into your body that you're not necessarily okay with. So it's a tough situation, but you have to say to yourself, well, then if the person is wearing the flag of being entranced by the behavior modification complex, then they are also going to be willing to stick out their appendages to get their life back on track and get back out to the nightclub or whatever the hell else it's going to be. So if you're not going to be one who's going to partake in that particular aspect of what's going on in our society, and not just here but across the world, if you're not going to be one of those people who goes along to get along, then you're going to be what's being now starting to be – a word is starting to come up. It's called refuse-nicks.
Oh.
Refuse-nicks is starting to come up in Europe. Some friends of mine over in the UK were, you know, passed some articles to me. And so – if you're a refuser, and it's easy to, like I say, it's easy to pick them out. And so, like, when a refuser is getting tasered and pepper sprayed and beat to the floor because they didn't do something they were told to do, the rest of all the other people wearing that flag of agreement on their face, they're just going to look at you on the floor and just go, yeah, you deserve it, you dirty refusenik. Spread germs, killing grandma. Yeah, beat him to the floor. That's what people will say.
Go
it's
ahead,
like the medical Stanford experiment.
Oh, where you work.
Where the prisoners and the guards, they break the students up into two demographics, and they pretty much assume the identities automatically, and they live them out and act them out, and they manifest into real situations and violence and tensions and dynamics as far as prisoner and guards. In this case, you know, sheeps and whatever.
Yeah, it was done at Stanford University. And actually, the people involved in that particular experiment were literally damaged psychologically from what went on there.
They had a little serious trouble.
I'm dead serious.
They will from this one, too. This COVID thing is doing arguably much more damage than 9/11 and many other things that they tried to pull. And it's probably the same people behind both.
So,
Charlie,
go
ahead, Jimmy.
I just wanted to say, let me just say it. So
yeah.
Let's bring up the critical path to get to where we are, because all these appendages off the critical path, these players and these actors and these script readers, they don't really mean anything. What means something is the critical path, the social engineering critical path. So 9/11 was on that critical path. 9/11 and the things that happened as a result of 9/11 softened the heads of the American population to get them to a place where they need somebody, they need daddy to protect them. They need somebody, a protector. Go ahead, Charlie.
Well, it's also an invisible enemy, much like the terrorists. You know, there's always an invisible enemy. Right. He's right around that corner. He's going to get you. If you don't, you know, even though the chances of being killed by a terrorist in the United States were great. You have a greater chance of dying by having a vending machine fall on you on a Wednesday than getting killed by a terrorist. That, statistically speaking. But never mind that. We have to spend $1 trillion and start a bunch of wars all over the place. So if you are still of the mindset that 9/11 was an organic event and that everything that is described about it was exactly, you know, as they say, well, then you're going to triple mask. You know, you're going to be front of the line. And I thought that, you know, one of the things Jimmy said, he was talking about, you know, the refuseniks and being able to identify them. I thought it was interesting about midway through the summer last year, when the mask situation was not mandated and the terror was kind of fading a little bit in June or so. And you would go out to the grocery store and you would see everyone doing their thing. You know, they were shopping, no masks, nothing like that. And then all of a sudden the mask mandate kicked in. And I suggest that the reason for that was that they needed a visual representation of this virus, because the virus is invisible. The fear was invisible. It's all in your head. But if you've got a mask on your face, Now you walk into that same grocery store and everybody's got a mask on their face. You're like, what is going? It's impossible for you to forget at that point. Not to mention just the psychological ramifications of wearing masks and all that stuff. That's a whole other thing. But it made the virus visible. And that was what was missing. It was obviously it was on TV and we were getting it 24/7. But once the mask situation kicked in, I felt like it took it to the next level.
Dave Scorpio, Charlie, that is an excellent point. The visual, the easy entrainment, just like whenever going back to sports, when I used to be a sports fan, now I could care less because they're destroying our very way of life. But remember every year when like the New York Yankees or the LA Lakers were really good and all of a sudden people in South Dakota and people in Alabama started to wear a Lakers jersey or a New York Yankees cap just to be part of the winning tribe. And that's the way it is with these masks. It seems like
they're on the winning team. They've got their masks. They're following Fauci. They're good little soldiers. I mean, look, they want to do things right. They want to show everyone that they're thoughtful and compassionate. And I don't think that the majority of the people are coming from a bad place. Even I think that they're coming from a place of goodness. They want to help. They think they're helping. The problem is that it's given a lot of people with too much free time on their hands something to attach themselves to.
Yeah.
They've had people with unimportant lives now have an important mission in life, and that is to save everybody and make sure they have the masks on. And they take it very seriously because they think that it matters and they think that they're helping. And so if you take that away from them, they cling to this so badly. What happens if the mask mandate goes away? Well, then what are these people going to do? What are they going to bitch at you about in the grocery store? Then it gives them purpose in their life. And that's, you know, for people that have nothing else going on, I suppose that's very important, but it's being handled in such a bizarre way. And, you know, it'd be the best, most interesting psychological study to just review 2020, if it wasn't so damn serious. Yeah. You know, the implications are so serious, but to go back this last year, they will study this in history books and sociology classes, if they even still exist, if they haven't been shut down by the by the radicals, they will study this for decades.
Hey, Charlie, do you think that this is maybe something that they're monitoring us with our digital devices and studying us with AI already, like with quantum analysis, things like this, maybe to use facial recognition and ID who's, you know, compliant and who's resistant to these draconian, absurd measures, you know, who has common sense, who doesn't, who's a threat to the state, who's a thinking man, and who's just going to be walking the path or who's going to be a Judas goat or things like this. I almost think that they're assessing the citizens. And like you were saying earlier, the people that are falling into this panic or this fear of the boogeyman or the Gollum Enterprise extortion racket, they're all identifying into certain levels of this. You know, they build identities around this based on their levels of fear or their levels of compliance to justify this behavior. And in many cases, like you say, they like being with the first place team or like going along with the winning side. Mm-hmm. And it really magnifies and escalates itself from they establish a position of authority or a sense of righteousness. And really good people are being manipulated with bad information from evil people to deliver this on other good people who are trying to warn them. So you're really seeing the obtuse being weaponized against the well-intentioned, and they're really seeing demographics forge themselves on this level of information, it seems like, you know?
It is something I have been talking about for a while, that these facial recognition cameras look, there's 300 million of them in Shenzhen alone for their social credit system. Those are getting exported here as fast as they can. We know when we walk in a grocery store, we walk in a bank or a convenience store or whatever, there's going to be cameras. And yes, they're going to, what we have done inadvertently, us deniers, refuseniks, as Jimmy said, is we've outed ourselves in a way. We've walked through the door without our masks on, and we've outed ourselves as people that will not participate in this sort of collective nonsense. And I do that because first of all, it's important to me. And I also think it empowers other people that see you like that. They go, oh, okay, if that guy's not doing it, then I cannot do it too. And you know, for the people that are sort of just barely
People thank me. I've had people thank me for not wearing a mask. They're like, you've given me courage. The other day, a lady did that when I was out at the storage. Like, I want to thank you for not wearing a mask. It gives me the courage not to do it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. This goes as quickly as everybody sort of lined up and became mask aficionados. That can change pretty quick. I mean, wait till they all get respiratory problems from it. Of course, they'll blame it on the virus, of course. But
pneumonia, bacteria or something. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Bacteria, exactly. Pneumonia, whatever. Like the smallpox thing. They were just talking about it earlier on Fetzer's show, man. It's amazing to see like the smallpox outbreak in the 1920s. The same eugenicists put the vaccination program on the Marines and on the troops in Europe. And this is what pretty much caused the outbreak. And they pretty much saying that they're putting the cart in front of the horse in terms of the historic recollection of this. And I think that it's really a disservice to the truth, and it's a disservice to the illusion of safety that these people are being mobilized under, rushing out to get these vaccines, shoving people out of the way like it's Black Friday. I can't believe it.
You get a donut though.
yeah, maybe that's the thing. Wow.
Dave Scorpio, jump in
for a donut.
Yeah, I think you guys are making some good points about the purpose and the effects of the masking. Because the mask is like a movie prop. It all makes it seem very real. It's no longer something in your mind. And the other thing is it's a great way for the controllers to gauge their success in the control of the vast herd of people just by looking at the cameras and see what percentage of people are wearing masks. And what's very interesting about what they're doing here is that they're essentially trying to have a revolution. This Great Reset is a rebranding of the New World Order, you could say, but it's also a type of revolution. But it's going to be unique in a way because when this revolution is over, the exact same leaders will stay leaders. They're not going to replace the leaders and, you know, put people to the guillotines, at least not the leaders, maybe other people. But they're going to have a continuation of the power structure, even though they're going to completely dismantle the social structure. And that is somewhat unique, I believe.
Hey, Dave, I was going to ask you something. You brought up a good point about the movie thing. It almost is like it started out as a blockbuster idea. And now, like, so many absurdities and plots and twists and contradictions and logic have presented themselves. So people are like literally on like the seventh franchise of the same movie concept, you know. So you're like, part seven is in no way going to be any way as relevant, or it's going to be far corny and not worth watching, to the point where people literally can't even see this anymore because it's so absurd. You know, that's I think what we're kind of seeing now. And you know, a lot of people are starting to wake up to this after the sixth, seventh, eighth, you know, lockdown, you know, wave, whatever, this crap they're pushing with the vax, you know, the overreach, the reset. I mean, there's just so many different coincidences going into whether market manipulations or just the theft of things, FASB 56, so many things going on right now. We are being looted left and right. And they're just trying to put this theater of absurdity out there that people are participating in and putting all their energy into that. And I think that really you got to see through that to know not only what the big picture is, but also to have a chance at not falling into this whole trap, because it is really a no-win logical trap. It's a cul-de-sac.
Jimmy, you've done quite a few excellent shows with Epic Journeyman and Rio investigating the mind rape and mind control that is the Hollywood empire and the mass media. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, one of the things that's really actually shocking to me is people are all of a sudden finding themselves amazed that people are standing on sets and they're not where they thought they were. You know, I mean, this whole thing that runs in the background of everything that's going on in our world, the thing that actually creates the reality is the television set and the multimedia behavior modification complex. So you were asking, do they use your phone? Of course they do. They have been. And any chump who was anywhere, any doing anything where stuff got broken or anything got happened, they got your phone number, because when you walk, this is my business. I was in the cell business for 10 years. I built cell sites. You know, there's a thing called proximity detection. You know, I can detect your phone number when you walk into the proximity of my device that I have there to detect it. So, you know, people think, the funny thing is people think the government's so stupid. Oh, they didn't do anything, or they weren't there, or blah, 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 blah. No, believe me, trust me on this, man. There was teams there. Everybody's phone numbers have been gotten. So you walk around without a mask on. You're one of these people. You're a refusenik. Well, guess what, man? You're on a million facial recognition cameras as the guy in that crowd who didn't have a mask on. They already know your name, dude. They already know what house to come to. You know, and think about this. Your political affiliation happens to be on these contact tracers' phone applications. So when they show up at your door, there's a red dot or a blue dot. Remember those? Yeah. Well, it's going to mean you're Republican or a Democrat. And when they show up at your door, these smarmy millennial snowflakes, as you call them, they're actually going to be the ones in the power, and they're going to have your cojones right there. And they're going to say, you know what? My temperature reader says you have a temperature. I'm afraid you're going to have to come down to the Refusenik camp because you won't take the Michelle Pfeiffer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, these kids have been so weaponized and literally, I don't want to say, like, underserved. They've been betrayed not only by the medical but educational systems. This is an absolute sinister attack, a war crime on the cognitive abilities and the health systems and the immune systems of many of these people. And this needs to be called out as such. And to be calling it a vaccine is such a disgrace to the term, and it's an abusive language. I think that you really should be calling it something along the lines of a war crime, and really this should be seen as such. And this conversation can't even be had. It's laughed out of the room from the mainstream media. So that should be a dead giveaway to anybody that's on the fence or not even sure about what's going on here, because these guys aren't really covering up. I mean, 60% of their ad revenue comes from these people. So you think they're ever going to say anything bad about them? I mean, one does the other swear, but that is.
Okay, that was a great rapid first hour. Stay tuned for hour two of The Perfect Triangle with Charlie Robinson and Jimmy Jean.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
The evasive. But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. And there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Okay, I was going to ask you, you know how Bill Gates and his father were parents?
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back.
Yep, I absolutely get that.
You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope.
You guys here in the station?
We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up.
One
Revolution Radio. All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of The Perfect Triangle. We're joined by honored guests Charlie Robinson and Jimmy Jean, and we'll be back to second hour in a moment. But first, remember, Revolution Radio has been around over a decade, like going on 11 years, actually. And it was started by the great Mike Ringley, known as Nighthawk. As Jimmy says, the Revolution Radio is the house that Nighthawk built. And he set out from day one, no corporate sponsorship, no say in editorial content in any way. This has always been and intended to be and will remain a free speech platform. But as anyone in the real world knows, nothing is truly free. And so we need your help. You know, we just had under after relentless hacking attacks, the back end guys, Mr. Rowe and Monster 383 and Joe Tones put together a really robust new Delta server for Studio A and B. That all costs money. And we all the hosts, all the management, we all donate our time. Nobody gets paid, but the costs are, you know, $2,000 plus a month for all the technology, the cloud stuff and all that. So we ask that you donate. If you go to the new website, freedomslips.com or revolution.radio, it's got a real nice clean look. And there's a button right there that says donate if you want. If you're old school, scroll to the bottom. One of the management team, Lady Horse, she puts her address there. You can mail her a money order or a check or what have you. But and another cool way if you want to represent, because Ringley and the new head honcho, Thomas, a mad painter, are great artists too. Ringley was a great musician and songwriter. I mean, that guy was a just a multi-talent. It's sad he passed so soon. And they developed all kinds of logos. And at the Zazzle store, Revolution Radio Zazzle store, you can get hats, T-shirts, bags. You know, if you want a pair of Chuck Taylors, they'll print Chuck Taylors. And there's so many cool things. And if anything, you should represent right now, not the fact that you got, we'll use, Jimmy's going on YouTube, so we're not going to say jab, we're going to say Michelle Pfeiffer as the code word for any kind of injection. And there's this one goof who got the Moderna Michelle Pfeiffer, and he got a tattoo of his barcode on his tricep, rather. I'm like, what is wrong with people? I say that about 20 times a day. What is wrong with people these days? Everybody wants to be a special snowflake. So Zazzle, if you want to represent something real and important like free speech, wear a Revolution Radio T-shirt. But the best way, because right now we've got you know, thousands of hours of archives. Every show is recorded and put up in the archives when it's all working right, you know, within 24 to 48 hours. And there are nearly 100 hosts, and there are some amazing people. Everybody loves the legendary Jim Fetzer. Jimmy Jean does a couple shows. Mr. Rowe, who's just an amazing, amazing polymath, well, the stuff we do, people like what we do, and there's so many others, nearly 100 hosts. If you go to Patreon, look up Revolution Radio, and sign up to donate $5, $10, $20, you know, $10, that's just a Starbucks Vente Maca Muki Mocha, whatever crazy name they're calling it this month, or it's just a big-ass Chipotle burrito, you know, 10 bucks, but that'll keep us going. And if you sign up for Patreon, then we know the money's coming in. You know, if you've ever owned a business, it's great to know you have a steady stream of income every month, not chasing around to make your nut to pay your rent and bills and blah, blah, blah. So please, if you go to Patreon, the good news is they're going to lock the archives down soon. So only the Patreon subscribers get access to the archives. That's coming soon. Right now, the archives are free, but they aren't always going to be. So head over to Patreon and please sign up. You'll really be supporting the most noble of causes, free speech at Revolution Radio. So back to the two guests, Charlie Robinson, Jimmy Jean, as well as my regular co-hosts, David Scorpio and Brutal Honesty, Chris Weinert. So we started and then we hit the break. Charlie, what was shocking to you about Bill Gates, who's essentially building an empire through creating a vaccine monopoly, which is so wrong in so many ways. And you were going off on him really great in your show. I was really enjoying it.
Well, what he's doing right now, taking the vaccines part out of it, which is tough to do. Let's focus on what he's doing with the food supply. He is invested in, Beyond Meat. He is one of the number one financiers of that. That is the Impossible Whopper, things like that, that you get the plant-based meat, the fake meat. And he's heavily invested in that, which isn't in and of itself anything necessarily nefarious, except that the Impossible Whopper has 18 million times more phytoestrogen in it than the regular Whopper, and it's only 5% fewer calories. So it's not a diet substitute or anything like that. His investment in that is one thing. He was at one time the largest individual shareholder of Monsanto, which makes GMO seeds. And he was the financier of the Svalbard seed vault in Norway, which holds 3 million seed accessions of actual real seeds. So think about this. He's got the real seeds hidden away in a bunker in Norway that's 1,100 kilometers south of the North Pole. It is 400 feet up a mountain, 300 feet inside the mountain. Then he's drilled this whole place and they've got all the real seeds there. So you're never going to get to them. He's simultaneously financing GMO seeds so that you can have the fake food. He's financing the Impossible Foods, more fake food. And he's now the number one owner of farmland in America, which I suggest is not just to get access to the food, but probably also to gain access to the water and the water rights. So he is locking down the food supply in a way that should be alarming to people. Clearly, he's going to get pushback on the vaccine and should. That is probably number one. But let's not lose sight of what he's doing to the global food supply. And that is a guy that you do not want to be in charge of that.
Jimmy Jean, your thoughts on Bill Gates? You're muted.
I was just saying, where do I start? I'll just start here. The thing about it is they broke up AT&T. So companies are not allowed to monopolize things. So when you see somebody, an individual like this person that we're talking about with access to ungodly amounts of money, there's really nothing that you can't do once you get to a certain level of money, literally. So, if somebody if somebody becomes a trillionaire and they have $1 trillion, is it okay for them to just go around, buy everything up? I mean, the thing about people don't realize, and you know, Charlie, maybe you could know a little bit more than most about this, but China owns so much real estate in the United States, you know, the right to own property. Well, your enemy comes in and just starts buying up property in your country. you know, and they're buying it up at bargain prices because, you know, your president signed the bankruptcy of your country away for $7 trillion that day when he signed that off. And we're in receivership now. That's why everybody's running for the exits, grabbing as much booty as they can before the whole shit house comes down, like Jim Morrison said. You know, we got a serious problem when people's money dictates their ability to affect the world in a way that's not positive. There's nobody standing in the way of him and anything he wants to do because it's all about money. As long as you got enough of it, man, you can stuff pockets from here to, you know, till, you know. I mean, look at those people up in the Congress and Senate, man. Those people got that big soprano wads hanging out of their suit pockets. They're $25,000 suits and their $15,000 ties that they wear up there. John Kerry's ties cost $15,000, man, because they have JK all over them, everywhere on the whole tie. It says JK. But Charlie, doesn't China own a substantial portion of the United States of America? And aren't international trade zones constitutional free zones? So really, the Constitution doesn't apply in these international trade zones.
Well, they've got the Port of Long Beach now, which is the
Oh, shoot, my bad.
That should be alarming. You know, that's where the bulk of and it's smart from China's standpoint. Why not? You've got all this, you're sitting on US dollars that you want to recycle back in. You got to use them to spend money to buy something tangible with them. It's otherwise we're locked into a weird relationship with China where we buy cheap goods from them. They use our dollars to buy our treasury debt. So they can't really sink our economy without sinking their own economy in the process. So we have like a mutually assured destruction. But what they are doing with those dollars, if they're not buying treasury notes, they're buying real estate. They're buying anything that they can get their hands on. Yeah, Jimmy's right.
So they're like the old Saudi guys. Hey, Charlie, they're kind of like the old Saudis, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
when Bush drove the price of oil, went up to like $300 a barrel. How much money was made during that period of time when oil was $300 a barrel? They let all the 100-year almond farms in California, they let them all die out, and you go drive down the Highway 5 now, you see a bunch of oil derricks out there pumping oil. No more almond trees, but plenty of oil derricks. And, you know, I mean, what are we going to do? The world now has gotten to a point where, I mean, you know, we're a capitalist country, right? So we support capitalism, don't we? So when somebody's an entrepreneur like Bill Gates, like he invented it in his garage.
Yeah, right.
So but he's a person who's got enough money. So isn't he the role model for the system? Really? I mean, he came out of nowhere, man. It's a Cinderella story. There he is, the evil Mr. Rogers coming out of nowhere with the computers that he stole from Apple, the operating system. Now he wants to put an operating system in you. And he can't even stop the viruses on the operating system that he has on. He's made all these billions of dollars for it. You're going to trust him with your inner operating system? I don't think it's a good idea. But anyway, what I was saying, though, is somebody who has money, who is the jewel of the American dream. He's a billionaire now. So we should respect him and let him do whatever he wants. No, man. See, that's what's all. That's the problem. The problem is that the jewel that we put in front of everybody in America is that jewel. The jewel that you can be and do anything and become anyone. And so, but when you do, you know, there's a bunch of people like us sitting around taking shots at you. So the thing is, but they still do what they're going to do. The seed vault's still there. Monsanto, there's still GMO. There's still the injectables. Michelle Pfeiffer is running wild all over the country. You know, these patents are getting passed forward. The technology is being developed. You know, stuff's happening. It's happening every single day. Every single day, and you got people arguing about which color it is, blue or red. Meanwhile, you have no cognitive liberty anymore. what goes on in your head is no longer your private business. It's no longer your own private thoughts. At this point, let me tell you, you guys were asking me earlier about this period of time we were going through. Here, I'll throw you a bone here. I did some research on solitary confinement. Okay, and one of the pieces that I saw was this dude who decided he wanted to see what it was like to be in solitary confinement. So he put himself in solitary confinement. And there became a point in that solitary confinement where the individual no longer could tell whether he was dreaming or awake, because everything was the same. The lights are always on. He's always in this white room. Nothing changes. Everything's the same. And he would wake up from his, he'd sleep for a couple hours. He'd wake up and he'd not know if he was even dreaming. And I mean, I think that's the state of mind that we're in. We're in that place where, I mean, most people can't even believe where we are.
They're in a state. Yeah.
You're frozen.
Chris, your take on Bill Gates.
Well, I think that he's a third generation eugenicist who probably has Federal Reserve money, all the innovation that DARPA could buy. And of course, he's an innocent, you know, looking guy who can get out in public and look all bashful and really deliver like this Trojan horse depopulation agenda. That's really what I got on him. I don't have any more respect for him than that.
Dave Scorpio, your thoughts on Bill Gates?
Well, you know, what I find interesting about Bill Gates and a lot of these billionaires is that their life story does not add up once you really look into it. And, you know, Elon Musk is just another example where their life story does not add up. The man's company has always lost money, yet the stock keeps going up. Bill Gates' life story doesn't add up in the least. And what I believe is a lot of these billionaires are essentially just salesmen. They're assigned a role. And that's why all of them become philanthropists, because it's not really their money. They're assigned things that they're supposed to do with it.
Yep.
And it's funny how they're calling Bill Gates the world's richest man. Give me a break. There's trillionaires out there, guys. Come on. And, you know, I think another reason why Bill Gates is buying up farmland is to essentially let this farmland lie fallow and create a food shortage. I believe that food is going to be used as a weapon in the very near future.
Yep.
And, you know, I always think about those slimy black bars that they showed people eating in that movie Snowpiercer. That might be coming because I do believe the food is going to be used as a weapon. No question about it.
Well, if you get the jab, you can survive on a Krispy Kreme donut once a week.
Start storing up Impossible Burgers. That's all you can do.
And like it.
Yeah, you'll be happy. You'll own nothing and you'll be happy.
You'll love it.
No, I mean, so Charlie, any other thoughts on Bill Gates? Because I tell you, man, that was one of the best, most succinct 1 hours of tearing that guy apart I've ever heard. And you there was no fat. It was all prime meat and well done. And how do we wake people up to this guy? You know, he may not be the Antichrist, but he'll sure do until the real one gets here, right?
Well, yeah, for sure. And it's funny what Dave said is really important about these guys having a role, a specific role. And what you see is that the origin stories are the same. You've got Bill Gates coming out of a Harvard dorm room as a freshman, starting a transformational technology company that he moves to the West Coast, steals even more technology, and then becomes a $100 billionaire and decides to become a philanthropist. Well, guess who else has that same story? Zuckerberg. Identical.
Yeah, right.
Who has it?
Rockefeller.
The garage story. Hewlett-Packard, Google, and all these companies started out of a garage in Palo Alto. There's two
Rockefeller, Morgan.
Yeah, it's crazy.
We've done a bunch of work on this, and a lot of the PhD dropouts from Stanford Research Institute, Stanford University, you know, so they're contacted by whoever, you know, government can't own companies, but government has all kinds of technologies that it needs to get out. So government goes to some dude and goes, look, man, boom, why don't you drop out, come over here and start this company up? And so that's what happens. you know, Scorpio is 100% correct. And a lot of these guys, they're just like, you know, they're playing a role. So my name's Elon Musk. I get a black credit card from my benefactor. I fly around the world. I do this stuff. I look like I'm the guy. But am I sitting in my back porch with a pencil, honing out my plan about how to get to Mars and figuring out all the equations that I need to do? No. He's sitting on his patio smoking dope like he did on Joe Rogan's show. And he accidentally released some photos, I guess, yesterday on his he tweeted out some photos of a UFO over Mars, if you're interested in that.
Really?
Accidentally.
Going to Mars in 2025. Don't worry, guys. It's real.
Yeah, what's amazing to me with Bill Gates is you look at his history. He was born, you know, since it's baseball season, I believe, started yesterday. He was born 3 inches from home plate, and yet he believes he hit a home run. And yep. There's an apocryphal tale, I think it's true, though, of he wouldn't let his sister use his baseball glove. He made her pay him rent on his baseball glove. When the dude's living, you know, like the Neil Young song, Mansion on the Hill, he's living La Vida Loca. And so what's really funny about him is in high school, supposedly, they had access to one of the first internet link-ups or wired link-ups to the IBM mainframes. And the first thing he did, he didn't learn how to code something useful. He learned how to write a virus. And that was a connection at $40,000 an hour. And so you get to the point where he goes off to school. You can see this guy is a total manipulator because he's always getting other people to do his work for him. So his grandfather, maternal, dies. He gets this sweet trust fund bonus. And all of a sudden, he's called. And his father, Charlie, which you alluded to, but you were pretty tactful in your show, his father was a total Rockefeller fixer, man. He was like an unknown Henry Kissinger, where Kissinger loved the limelight and was doing all this globalist fixing, whereas Gates Sr. didn't need the limelight. He was happy just going to the Bilderberger meetings and the Club of Rome things, and he was the back room getting the deals done, whatever the 13 families wanted, good old Bill Gates Sr. got done. And so what's interesting to me is even how he partnered up with Paul Allen. Allen's the techie who's doing all the work. All the other guys who are hired is doing all the work, much like Tony the Rat Fauci. But Bill Gates' name, because he brought the money, is on everything. So he's not doing the work, but gaining the ownership, just like Fauci. Isn't it interesting that these two guys are steering the Michelle Pfeiffer bus and are well on the way towards destroying this sovereign republic, and yet they've never really even gotten their hands dirty?
Just like Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
By all accounts, Zuckerberg can't code.
Right. But he just fell upward.
Facebook?
Yeah, he fell upward.
He got the LifeLog program.
Right, LifeLog. Yeah.
Hey, do you anybody know if that Frederick Taylor Gates, the lawyer that handled the Rockefeller's antitrust suit for Standard Oil, if he's any relation to Bill Gates, Frederick Taylor Gates?
I don't know.
He started the Standard Oil and made it 15 times more profitable in the antitrust, making parallel infrastructures under Standard Oil.
Well, I have no idea. Yeah, that'd be interesting. Go ahead,
Jimmy. The 1910.
Well, I was going to point something out that's really important about what we were just saying about these characters. You know, some of these characters, they are and they do know what they're doing, but you don't have to necessarily know that. I mean, they could come to you at the PhD program and make you think you're a really smart guy. And, you know, you think you really are Elon Musk, you know?
You
don't know what's going on with the 250 employees that are sitting down there on computers, you know, and you're not even controlling anything that's going on. So the thing is, and it's the same thing with these perpetrators and these shills and these clickbaiters on the internet. It's exactly the same thing. You know, you just have to be careful because, you know, not everybody's coming correct. And, you know, Bill, as far as Bill Gates's abilities, let's say, are we saying and agreeing that if you are the richest man in the world, then you are then you have now become the king of the world? You just do whatever the hell you want. And nobody can stop you unless they haven't. I mean, and, you know, we were talking about it on the break about sweat equity and how these generations that have existed after everything was built, everything that they build is etheric. That doesn't actually exist in the real world. So there is no actual, you know, banging your knuckles and getting a, you know, hurting yourself, you know, putting it together. It's so there's really no sweat equity in the, you know, brick and mortar. So brick and mortar is expendable. Statues of the past, those are expendable. Free speech.
And there's no guys in a Bitcoin mine somewhere working their ass off?
There is, but you know what? Check this out, man. It's no longer okay. Easter is no longer okay. Today's Good Friday. So happy Good Friday to you if you're Catholic. And the other part is that, hey, from Easter is now being called racist. It's Easter has to be eliminated because it's a racist holiday.
Well, Jimmy, you know, if I could just add on to something you just said, man, you know, it's not like they sit these people down. I totally agree with what you're saying about like Elon Musk. It's not like they sit these people down and say, okay, you're going to join the Illuminati and here's our exact plan and here's what we're going to do. Everything is compartmentalized. They tell all these people just what they need to tell them. It's all need to know basis exactly. And compartmentalization. And that's something we need to remember when talking about these people. I don't think very many people get the full sit down and say, okay, you're in the Illuminati now and here's the master plan and here's a copy of the book we're following. I don't think it works like that.
No, and it's like I was saying with the internet. It's like if there's somebody on the internet who's shilling, they don't know they're shilling. They think they're doing the right thing, but somebody in the background is financing that by somehow. So they're making money and they're keeping that person alive and letting that person spew their garbage because it ties into the social engineering that's going on. And the person that's sitting behind the mic, that doesn't mean that they're part of the Illuminati or anything. They're just they doesn't even mean that they're shills, that they're purposely trying to lie to somebody. It's just that they don't even know it because they're not. I mean, look. It's so easy to manipulate people. And when money, like we're talking about with Bill Gates, when money is the thing that everybody wants so bad, then when you have unlimited money, you can have anything you want. I'm just asking that. I keep asking that question, man, because the society that we're living in, this way that we've built our whole way of life in America, Bill Gates character shouldn't be the evil character. He should be the jewel of the story. So I keep asking you guys, what happens when maybe we should decide that capitalism maybe is not the way to go? I mean, what do you guys think about that? So I mean, and I don't mean that in a philosophical way. Like I'm not trying to go down a political road, but what I'm saying is capitalism, as far as money being the object of our existence. Do you not think it's time to move out of that time or to that framework?
Well, it's funny, all the names that we have, such as capitalism and communism, they're all just scary terms. There's never been real capitalism. It's always been tied to usury, and it's always been tied to controlling who I'm going to allow you to do this as long as I get my 5%, I get my 15%, and you run this through me. It's always a series of organized criminal endeavors, just like, you know, in theory, communism, Karl Marx, when he wrote it, he was trying to urge people to think of a worker's paradise, but there's no worker's paradise. There's no paradise, period. But all these isms are always trying to drive people away from owning their real power and forming into types of collectives. And the sad thing is collectively this country, you're supposed to be the founding fathers wanted you to be able to vote. And Jefferson said every 20 years, the government should be thrown out. And yet now masterfully in the last 110 years, the internationalist usury parasites have essentially wormed their way into this country and control everything. They control the money. They control the federal government. They control big pharma. They control big agri. They control big education. Go down the list of they control big war, the military industrial complex. So what is it that globalist usury doesn't control? The only way to offset it should be a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And that's what a lot of these mogoloids and patriots think is going on. But in reality, what we've had for the last 110 years is a government, especially the last 40 years, is of the parasites, for the parasites, by the parasites. And there's no bigger example than lowlifes like Pelosi, Mitch McConnell becoming eight-figure wealthy because they serve the Chinese or they serve big oil. Yeah.
And it's a representative government, right? Where's the representatives? Is anybody up there representing any of you? Has anybody gone up there and said, taking your viewpoint up there and help make law? No, man, they're all up sitting there. Do you know there's a, what is there? There's 235 times, there's three lobbyists for every congressman and senator at $60,000 to $120,000 a year. That all they do, 8 hours a day, is go sit up there. Why? Because corporations are people. And because corporations are people, people get to lobby their congressmen and senators. So
you want, and money is corporations' free speech. It's absolutely insane.
I know. So you want to get rid of that? Well, there you go, man. Boom. That's all you got to do.
Print it out of nothing.
No, corporations are not people. And they're not people. They don't exist. If you're not flesh and blood, you're not people. You shouldn't be have the ability to send your army of $120,000 a year lobbyists up there to pass laws that are not good for the people. So we can't vote. The people that we pretended to get in by our voting, they don't have any interest in, you know, representing us. We don't have a representative government. Half the country doesn't like the current administration. I mean, can you find a satisfied individual anywhere? I mean, I don't see any satisfaction. We don't get any. All we get is frustration. And so, like, what happens when frustration has no outlet? It has to come out somehow, and it comes out with people setting cars on fire. Like, what's about to happen with that verdict when that guy walks because he didn't kill that guy? This whole country is going to be like Rodney King, you know. People aren't even really talking about that anymore, hardly at all.
Well, Charlie, you wrote the brilliant book with Jeff Berwick and the controlled demolition of the American Empire. How far along are we, and how do you see this going the next year or two?
Well, we're at the end stages. That's sort of undeniable. The criminals have gotten access to the house and they've rekeyed the locks.
That's a good way
and
to put it.
We're on the outside looking through the window going, hey, what about us? Are you going to represent us? And there's no intention to represent us. This is what we've made a comparison to the way that the Soviet Union broke apart in the late 80s, early 90s. And how that sort of is the outcome for America, which is, you know, it started with debasing the currency, dragging them into an unwinnable war in Afghanistan. They did 10 years, we're in their 20 years. So that is awful. Politicians were stealing anything that wasn't looted, wasn't nailed down. They were inviting oligarch friends in to help them privatize anything that they could, you know, anything that was governmental. Hey, bring these guys in, privatize the coal industry or the gas industry or whatever. So we're seeing some of the similar fingerprints on this currency manipulation and destroying it from within. The Russian people, the Soviets, they had no trust in their media at all. Pravda, you know, they knew it was propaganda. And what did you get? You got breadlines. And where are we going? Breadlines.
Yeah.
And so I hate to say it. I'm an American. I want what's best for America. I want only good things. But that's unfortunately, is how we see it. It's pretty frustrating.
Yeah, and I thought that Jimmy and you just made some great points about you know, capitalism and you know, how it's really, we've never had true capitalism. And one thing we need to realize is that, you know, fractional reserve banking as it's currently practiced is nothing more than legalized criminality. That's what it is. And as long as the base of our system revolves around people that can just print up money and give it to whoever they want covertly, then we're going to have real problems. We're never going to have any kind of an honest system. And until people see that is one of the root problems, we're just going to spin our wheel.
Yeah, these people are traitors that run the Fed. I mean, look at all the things they fund and subsidize, you know, whether it's Monsanto or DARPA, technocracy, you know, weapons, military industrial complex, education, all these things. They have their thumb in every pie of every crucial aspect of our life. And it's not an accident. It is for control. It is to bring us to this system dependency or the logistics industry. I'm getting a bad echo. Sorry. You guys want to go to someone else, man? I'm going to drop out.
Sure. Charlie, what are your thoughts on the next 60 days with Joe Biden? Like I said in my intro, he's like, you know, you don't actually have any freedoms. Well, I believe that I do. And the people I quoted who replied to him, they're going to restaurants, they're going to nightclubs. A lot of people are living their lives just like Sweden did the whole time. And as I made the other point is that the death total in the United States is half a million less than it was in 2018 when SARS, the original SARS, was a nasty bug. I had that. And so, there's Scorpio again too. What are your thoughts? What are we looking at for this summer? Well, the rest of the year.
Well, Jimmy mentioned the potential riots coming from this verdict. I was going to USC in 92 when the Rodney King riots happened. I was in South Central Los Angeles. I know how fast that can happen. And I think we're headed to something like that. We got a little taste of it last summer. And so if we get that again, that'll be yet another reason, an excuse to crack down on freedoms and liberties and things like this. It's all problem, reaction, solution when you get right down to it, whether it's a manufactured event or whether it's an event that happens organically that's then hijacked and used for the reaction and manufacturing the reaction and the solution. They never miss a beat. They never miss an opportunity, as Rahm Emanuel said. You never let a good crisis go to waste. The United States government, in conjunction with their criminal enterprises in the media, look for things like that. And if things don't happen organically quick enough, then they just manufacture them, either through false flags or through
these NGOs,
blatant fakery from the media. Now we're getting into a world where we have digital technology that can make anything look like it's real. So we're in a weird spot where you can't even believe your eyes anymore. Yeah. And you know that the media is lying to you. They passed the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, which legalized propaganda in the United States to be used on Americans. And I would suggest they didn't do that just to sit on it. They're definitely using it. So we're getting legally lied to by a bunch of people that don't have a problem lying to you.
They're looting everything. They're looting everything too, Charlie. It seems like everything that tangible value, they're looting or trying to run people off their lands, like around the Great Lakes and even on the West Coast. They're trying to run people out of their lands and off their property left and right, not only by socioeconomic means, but by terrorism and running these mercenaries in many cases into these places. It's not an accident. This is the FBI probably knows about this. I'm sure that the politicians know about this. It's almost like they predict it, and then they play these things like they're organic things or they're, you know, real things, and they use them to take away our rights or take away our guns or take away everything else. And it's totally a trick. It's theater.
Yeah, because the United States is bankrupt. The United States is in receivership. Those fences were put around the up in Washington because eventually people are going to be pissed off. The thing is America as we knew it is gone, man. I mean, if you can't realize what we saw as far as our process is concerned, if we can't rely on our process, and the people up there are not representing us, then where are we? I mean, are we in the America that we, you know, want to hold on to so much? I don't think we are anymore. And realistically, like I was saying earlier, every place there's an international airport in this country, you draw a 50-mile ring around that. That's called an international zone. And within that zone, there is no constitution. It's international law. So if you look at the constitution-free zones right now, if you go over to, I can't think of the name of that organization. There's an organization, I can't think of it. It's a liberal organization that fights for people's rights. But anyway, ACLU. Go to the ACLU website and type in constitutional-free zone, because every place there's a border, there's a 100-mile zone from that border. Everywhere there's an ocean, there's a 100-mile zone from the ocean. So when you start looking at the country as it exists on that map of constitutional free zones, I start realizing you're not living under the Constitution. That's why it doesn't follow the Constitution, man. Well, that's because we're not living under the Constitution, man. What is it going to take for people to get a clue of what's going on?
And 2/3 of the America's population falls within that constitutional free zone.
Oh, wow.
As well, because it's all of the edges of it. It's really devious, and you never hear
Charlie, it talked about. Is that like the International Republic of Chaz?
Yeah, except they're not trying to grow corn on pizza boxes.
Not a Soros NGO.
Right.
Wasn't that implemented not that long ago, like in the 70s or 80s? Something
like that, yeah.
Yeah, not even that long ago. Jeez.
That's just a lockstep thing, no doubt. They've been laying this in since the end of World War II, probably longer.
So like Charlie said, you got the Long Beach port. You have the 10 freeway that runs all the way through the United States of America. You have a super highway that's built down in Mexico. One of the biggest ports in Mexico, this highway was going to go directly from Mexico all the way up to Canada. And just like,
right.
Just like you brought up earlier, the North American Union and all that stuff that people used to talk about all those years ago, people should maybe take a look at that again, because there may be an Amero, but it might be an Amero that's a Bitcoin style coin. And right. There may be, no borders, because like we all listen. If you're going to do $3 trillion of infrastructure, if you're going to build $3 trillion of infrastructure, where's them construction workers going to come from? Because there's not the average construction worker in America is 45 years old. So there's going to have to be labor. So if you need labor, where's it going to come from? Are people going to get out there and start getting into construction? Probably not. So why don't you turn the border into a money-making operation, hand people an Elon Musk-a-phone that's trackable anywhere, and then charge them $2,000 to come in, let them stay for 90 days. And when the 90 days is up, you send them a signal on the phone. If they don't leave, you grab them and throw them out. Man, look, you're not going to stop them coming over the border unless you sit there with a rifle and start shooting people. So start letting them in. And as they let them in, how about you let us out? How about a big brain drain from the United States of America? How about if they don't want to use the talent that they have here in America? Let's spread our talent throughout the world. Let's just go wherever the hell we want. I'm sick and tired of it, man. I've had enough. I want something else. I need something more.
Should we leave? They suck. You know? Why should we be the ones that have to leave? They're the ones that suck. We should forge our own alternatives outside of their system. I think that going to things outside of their currency system is a fantastic thing, like gold, silver, barter, you know, trade, labor, skills, things like this. We could really, you know, outsource the 1%, just like they're trying to do to us with robotics.
You're 100% correct on that, man.
Jimmy, I think you made some great points. And, you know, it's clear that democracy is really just a facade. It's sort of a con job to make the average citizen think that we have some say in what happens in this government, when really all that's happening is they're just sort of, you know, feeding out the agenda piece by piece and, you know, making us think that we're getting, when we get change, that that's what we wanted. And it's just, you know, leading us into this agenda slowly. And it's all an illusion. And I think you're right about the receivership. And look at how the Chinese system is being exported and brought to America very rapidly. And of course, who came up with the idea of lockdowns as the only solution for, you know, this so-called pandemic? Well, it was China. And then somehow, miraculously, the entire world decided, yes, we must do lockdowns. It's the only way forward. So, I think America is in receivership. And, you know, a lot of times when China does a big infrastructure project in a foreign country, part of the deal is you have to use Chinese labor. They bring their own labor to do the job.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. The thing they say about China, or I said this about China in my first book, was that they're building hospitals in Africa for sick Africans, and we're building graveyards for them. You know, yeah. That's the difference. Why the African continent has embraced the Chinese infrastructure projects is because they see them as at least partnering with them, whereas they don't trust us, and they shouldn't trust us. We've given North Africa no reason to trust us. We bomb the hell out of it every chance we get, you know.
That's right. Well, our economic model of partnership is to blow shit up, and the Chinese build stuff. That's a big difference, and they've done the same strategy in South America as well, Charlie.
Yeah, and that's actually what got me started in this whole thing. In 2007, I read John Perkins' book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman,
He
lays out the plan, in particular with the country of Ecuador, how the IMF and World Bank were off to the side, and Perkins approaches them and says, hey, listen, you got a great topography here. We can put a big hydroelectric power plant here. It'll generate electricity. It'll pay for itself in a decade, and you'll be good. What, you know, all these promises. So they sign on, the IMF loans them a couple billion dollars. His company, Maine, which is like a Halliburton, comes in, builds the thing. And guess what? It doesn't pencil out. And then what happens? Well, like any good loan shark, they come with a baseball bat one night, knock on the door and say, you owe us a lot of money and we've come to collect. You don't have the money. Well, I guess we can work something out. Why don't you privatize your fishing industry and sell it to our buddies, or privatize your lumber industry, or let us build a U.S. military base, or vote our way in a U.N. resolution or some shitty deal that Ecuador didn't want. They get suckered into it because of this. And so that's when I learned about debt as a weapon. And that is something that we're seeing. We're seeing it on a small scale, obviously inside the United States, but on a larger global scale, we see the IMF and World Bank in conjunction with the BIS loaning money to countries that have no ability to pay it back, and then extracting something tangible from them when they default on their payments. So it's a devious system. It goes back to where we started with the usury concept and capitalism and all these things. And it's like, if you've got these components like usury and interest and things that eventually blow up, you can't ever act surprised when the bomb eventually goes off, because that's the way the system is built.
I'm saying we should be capitalists and capitalize on all the suckers who still believe the American dream and coming up here in droves and have any way they can get here, because they think they're going to get here and they're going to be free. They don't know when they get here, they're going to catch a beating for a cop because they didn't have any ID or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like the country that we grew up in is no longer here. So we got to figure out what we're going to do now, right? So isn't that where we are? We're sort of at what we're going to do now. And usually what do they do when it's at that point? They revolution. They don't evolution. We don't evolve from here. We don't evolve. What they do is they wipe the board clean and we go around again. And that's it. Roundy, roundy, roundy. You know, maybe it's time for us to evolve instead of revolve and start using our brains instead of sniffing out these fake conspiracy theories and start politicizing ourselves and making ourselves into some sort of a political movement or some side. Because other than that, I mean, at least you're doing something. I mean, even if it doesn't work, you know, there's a story about a dude who came out and saw a bunch of starfish on the beach. He was standing there with an old Hawaiian lady, and he starts running around screaming, look at all these starfish, you know, what are we going to do? And the lady's calmly taking one and putting it in the water and walking back and putting it in the water. And he goes up and runs up to her and he goes, what are you doing that for? Look at all these starfish. That's not going to do anything. And she goes, well, it'll help this one. You know, so. We got to start helping each other, man. It's not a race war. It's a class war. And the 1%, these people, look, do me a favor. My name is Jimmy Jean, Jimmy Jean at jimmygene27@gmail.com. Send me an email if you can name me one billionaire who's not a communist. Okay, and that includes Mr. Trump.
Jimmy, you're just going to get a bunch of dick pics now.
That's fine. I don't mind. I'll just delete. It's all right.
Well, it
and if I send one back, they might be embarrassed, you know. So if you're going to send me a dick pic, make sure it's big, buddy.
Anyway, excellent point, Jimmy. Excellent point.
Seriously, though, his wife's father was a supreme communist in his past. And the very immigration that he was railing against in all his speeches, he used the very thing that he accused other people of being wrong for doing to get this communist killer, bloodthirsty fiend father of his wife in the country as a citizen. So, you know, the script readers aren't always what they seem. So be careful if you buy into the storylines.
Jimmy, you know, you're completely right. I know a guy, an expat down here that's from Slovenia, and he confirmed exactly what you said about Trump's wife's father, because she's from Slovenia. It's absolutely true. Big Communist Party titan. And Charlie, if I could just give a brief epilogue to your story about Ecuador. I'm currently living in Ecuador. And what happened as the result of all the debt that Ecuador got into with China is that Ecuador sold nearly one quarter of its rainforest to China at quite a low price. And that's where all the petroleum is as well in Ecuador.
Well, I'd like to say I'm surprised. kind of not. And well, and it's funny also with the facial recognition cameras in Shenzhen and that social credit system that they built out there, the first country they exported it to was also Ecuador.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So well, they're trying it out. I'm feeling that much like the reaction to the Corona situation, where China locked everything down and then everyone said, oh, look, let's do that. The social credit system, I think, is going to be tried out first and tested there and then exported around the world because these authoritarian governments now have the ability to tie it into a vaccine passport and universal basic income. And next thing you know, every move you make is monitored. And then we get back to where we started in this conversation, talking about being on facial recognition cameras for not wearing masks and being added to the database. Well, guess what? My social credit score is going down from associating with you conspiracy theorist refuseniks.
Yep, you're right. Well, we got about 5 minutes left.
Yeah, we're probably all blacklisted.
5 minutes left. Let's go around for a final observation statement. Chris, you start with you.
Yeah, I'd say we're probably all going to be blacklisted. We'll never work for the technocrats ever again because of this conversation and many more that we've had. So, I don't know. We just got to go down swinging, guys. I don't think there's any other way. There's no running from this. There's no backing down. This ain't something you can deal with. This ain't something that you can really collaborate with. You got to fight with everything you got. That's all I got.
Dave Scorpio, final thoughts?
Well, I totally agree about the social credit system. It's coming. And, I think our controllers have essentially realized that the most efficient system of government that exists on the planet today is the Chinese system, because it allows a certain degree of upward mobility to the people that are connected to the government. And then everyone else doesn't even think for a minute that they have any rights, or much less the right to free speech. And that's, I think, the big plan right now.
Jimmy Gene, final thoughts.
Well, I just want to say, I want to reiterate, I think it's a moment for evolution, not revolution. And if we're going to, we got to do something to get ourselves out of the situation. No one's going to do it for us. There is no savior. Nobody's going to help us. You know, the 1% cares about the 1%, and that's it. And they built a narcissistic, capitalistic society where the only thing, you know, he who has the gold rules, man, it's the golden rule. And the golden rule is not that. The golden rule is do unto others, you know. And on this Good Friday, try to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and turn the other cheek whenever you get the chance. And I'll be back tonight at 11 o'clock Pacific right here on Studio A if you want to join us.
And Charlie, final thoughts. Thank you so much for coming on the show. You've been brilliant as you usually are. Jimmy, thank you. You've been brilliant as usual. So Charlie, why don't you take the last couple minutes and promote whatever you'd like and give us your thoughts.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a whole lot of fun to hang out with you guys for a couple hours. I think one thing I would wrap up with is to, if you're trying to wake people up to the insanity of this, the vaccines, the masks, the all of that, it is imperative for you to prioritize your time and energy. There are a lot of closed minds out there that don't want to be open. Don't waste your time with them. You're going to feel frustrated. You're going to get nowhere. We are at a crunch time right now where we've got to wake up as many people as possible to what's actually happening. Best way to do that, not lecturing people and not just, you know, giving them a one-way street, make it a two-way street. Ask a question. Hey, don't you think that this sounds a little fishy? What do you think about all this mass situation? Get that conversation going so that it's a dialogue, not a monologue. And you will find that the response is much better. People don't want to be lectured. They just go like this and they say, no, stop. But if you come at them from a place where you say, hey, help me to try to understand this insanity, they might, through talking it out, realize, oh, I never even thought about this. And so that's what I've found over the years that has helped me. I learned from doing it the wrong way, believe me. But prioritize your time and energy and focus on the people that you think you can affect. And send good vibes to the people that you can't affect.
What a great way. Here comes the music. We're done until next week. Thank you so much, Charlie Robinson and Jimmy Jean. Jimmy's on tonight at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 Pacific, and Charlie does a lot. Check him out. Good night. Kevin Barrett's next.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others...